Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show on Saturday, November 28th, 2009. I'm Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic today is concerning Copenhagen and what LaRouche said some days ago: the Copenhagen summit must reject London genocide policy. And in fact, his wife, and I don't think Mr. LaRouche disagrees, Mrs. Helga Zepp LaRouche, said cancel it. It's fraud, it's genocide, and she also issued a statement within the last few days. Now, we're in the countdown to this awful kind of conference, and many other things are happening, and I'm glad we have with us to discuss this live here in the studio. I'm happy to welcome an old friend of mine personally, Marge Hecht. Welcome, Marge.
Thank you, Marcia.
Who is managing editor, right, Marge, of 21st Century Science and Technology magazine. We can repeat this, but many of you know it online. It's a .com at 21stcenturyscientetech.com. And also, I am very glad to have with us direct from Copenhagen Live, Tom Gillesberg, the director of the Schiller Institute. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
That's the Schiller Institute in Denmark, and which is associated with the Schiller Institute internationally. Helga Zepp LaRouche is chairman of that, right, Tom?
Yes.
And Tom has been leading the charge for years, and in recent days, literally, was part of an election slate running for office in the municipal elections in Denmark at this very tense time, and we'll get to that in a minute. But let me just say by way of introduction that our discussion is taking place, as I said, in the countdown to this crazy December 7th through 18th event in Copenhagen, which is this world summit on so-called global warming and climate change, which shouldn't be occurring at all. We've had the one thing is, too, I'll point out right at the outset, President Obama, that is representing the institution of the presidency of the United States, not just himself, has been induced to say he's going to go. We can get into that, which he certainly should not go. But this event comes about after decades of perpetration of the fraud that the Earth is overheating, that it's too much population that's responsible for all of this overheating. They produce gases, their activities like CO2. And all of this is very deliberate in its perpetration of fraud and myth, which really is serving the purpose of advocating policies that constitute genocide, getting rid of whole groupings of people. And the interest behind this over the decades are simply what you might call modern British Empire circles, neo-British East India Company, financial networks, control networks, agencies very much centered but not exclusively in London, pushing globalism, monetarism, I mean that is money and a kind of world casino policy of ripoffs, and certainly anti-technology to the point where we are in physical breakdown. You can see that the lack of food, the lack of water, the lack of means of existence. Now, this past week, everyone's seen headlines of one big fat bubble going splat, the Dubai World bubble, which is really part of the Dubai itself has been built up as a kind of center of black marketeering in that part of the world. It's a kind of Dubai, Afghanistan a based bubble of dirty money, drug, and weapons trafficking. But this is a kind of, it's not like one event that's unusual. It's just part of a kind of signature event of the era in which we are, where we should be taking emergency measures to restore national economies and the economy, which people around the world are mobilizing for by literally the name of the LaRouche plan for doing this, that would kind of put a tourniquet on the physical economic functions that are breaking down to preserve what's there, especially industrial and agricultural and other functions, organize for a new credit system, which really politically and strategically means we got to get, and we've seen initiatives towards this, which Lyndon LaRouche is discussing, from China and Russia, but we need the four major powers to come to accord and initiate this, China, Russia, India, the United States, and get on with projects, especially where billions of people are centered in the Pacific region, shift and towards development projects in Eurasia and elsewhere. And that's going to be, well, I don't want to prejudge, but December 3rd, which is this coming Thursday, this kind of perspective and where we stand is going to be part of what Mr. LaRouche is going to give in an international webcast based out of Washington, D.C. It'll be 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Eastern Savings Time in the United States, December 3rd, and the title is The Real Change is Coming. And I invite everyone to look on the Political Action Committee of Mr. LaRouche. You will see that's LaRouchePAC.com, LaRouchePAC.com. And make sure and organize people to participate in this. Anyone who can drive, get come. And Mr. LaRouche, likewise, is just watch the next 24 or 36 hours, if not sooner. He's finishing a strategic paper on whose title I understand from a few hours earlier today is The Dubai Crisis of Financial Europe. That's the subtitle. He calls it The Copenhagen Horror. So with that, maybe we'll get in now that update and plug for December 3rd for this LaRouche Political Action Committee webcast. Let's get on now with discussing what we've got here, including there are leading developments about the fact of what I asserted at the beginning. This whole thing about global warming is a fraud. It has genocidal purposes to it. Why don't we turn? I want to get to Copenhagen because we'll hear a lot about the firsthand, the buildup to this crazy meeting, but what we can really, in a way, maybe 20,000 people are coming, and that'll be a good chance for us to do something about it. But Marge, why don't you just start with the headlines of the fact that around 10 days ago, I understand on the fraud aspect, there was a kind of whistleblower event, and one of the centers of fraud in England got exposed.
Yes. Well, I think most important thing to understand in looking at this, and including looking at the 62 megabytes of emails that were hacked and then released publicly from the Climate Research Unit at East Anglia University. The most important thing to understand about global warming is that it was created as a genocide policy. It was invented as an issue going back at least 35 years for the purpose of reducing population. Very explicit. And what these recent emails, which I'll talk about later, what you can see in that is how these so-called scientists were carrying out what was decided 35 years ago and more in terms of creating a fraud, a statistical fraud, to show that humans were creating global warming. Now, the key figure in setting this up is Dame Margaret Mead. She is an icon of the rock, drug, sex counterculture in the U.S. In fact, I would rank her up there as the most evil woman of the 20th century, along with Bertrand Russell, whom we've called the most evil man, because she had her fingers into everything and promoted everything bad that has happened in the shift in the past 40 years. In 1974, she was at the United Nations Bucharest Conference, where Helga was also present, and where she then began on a mission to set up global warming. She pulled together a conference in 1975 called the Endangered Atmosphere Conference. And this was government-sponsored. It gathered leading scientists who were to engineer the global warming hoax as an issue. And this is what they discussed quite directly. At Bucharest, Margaret Mead said, quote, "The earlier extreme views that social and economic justice alone can somehow offset population increase and that the mere provision of contraception can sufficiently reduce population were defeated." That's what she said about Bucharest. Of course, that's not really true, but that is the whole theme here, that man does not have the creative ability to change anything, to change a problem. So billions of dollars and billions of mass media words and images have flowed since this 1975 Endangered Atmosphere Conference. The point was quite simple. They wanted to stop science. They wanted to stop classical science. They wanted to stop technological progress. They really wanted to destroy any capability of nations to solve a problem, to be able to provide for an increasing population. And they reinforced the idea that man is a beast, a cancer on the earth. So as opposed to viewing man as having a divine spark and being able to provide for increasing numbers of people by advancing agriculture, developing nuclear, developing fusion, and doing all kinds of things in the Prometheus myth, it would be like not letting man have fire. Well, that's what these scientists and others set out to do at this 1975 meeting. And you can read their quotes. There was a little book of proceedings. It's very hard to get, but you can get it. You can read it in EIR in an article on the conference and also on the 21st Century website. But what Mead said at this meeting, and I will quote directly from her, she wanted the atmospheric scientists present, who included many of those whose names you'll be familiar with, Stephen Schneider, George Woodwell, our science advisor to the president, John Holdren, was there. She said, quote, "What we need to invent as responsible scientists are ways in which farsightedness can become a habit of the citizenry of the diverse peoples of this planet. This, of course, poses a set of technical problems for social scientists, but they are helpless without a highly articulate and responsible expression of position on the part of natural scientists. Only if natural scientists can develop ways of making their statements on the present state of danger credible to each other can we hope to make them credible and understandable to social scientists, politicians, and the citizenry." And she wanted to develop a law of the atmosphere, just as the UN had tried to develop a law of the sea. So she continues, "I've asked a group of atmospheric specialists to meet here to consider how the very real threats to humankind and life on this planet can be stated with credibility and persuasiveness before the present society of nations begins to enact laws of the air or plan for international environmental impact statements." So all throughout this conference, she muffled any dissent. She wanted to go for consensus, and she had willing subjects. I mean, one more thing about the conference is that the people who were there, the scientists, were all fans of Paul Ehrlich or close associates of him. Clones of Ehrlich, you might say. Ehrlich wrote The Population Bomb in 1968, a very popular Malthusian book at the time that influenced college campuses. And, of course, the theme of this was that we can never provide enough food for people. There will be tremendous starvation, death, etc. And not acknowledging at all the ability of man to have new inventions, science and technology.
Well, one thing is, Marge, you really laid it out, pinpointed the nasties that came together at this particular time in history. Earth Day had been set up in 1970.
Right.
And, of course, this is coherent, this time period, with really the big push towards currency, anything goes on currency, setting up globalization,
sure.
You know, deregulation internationally. But let's stay a minute on 35 years of networks, and Tom may want to chime in here. There were UN network, United Nations networks set up. For some reason, in recent years, Tom, they picked some Danes to become the world flunkies for good.
It's very simple. I mean, Denmark is part of the Anglo-Dutch liberal system. I mean, we have a queen, we have parliamentary system, we especially since the turn of the century, Denmark has been very firm into this British-controlled camp on all policy issues. And then 2 years ago, it was basically decided to let Denmark have the honor of hosting this COP15 conference, this climate conference, to take place in the year 2009, and then to move everything towards making this the big event where you would get not just discussion about these things, but get a very firm, legally binding agreement, basically subduing all nations on planet Earth to an international green dictatorship. That was the intention. And for the last 2 years, basically this has been one of the main goals of the whole Danish government, the whole Danish political apparatus. Danish universities has been very much engaged in this. Like, the whole thing was said, here Denmark can finally be super famous in the world. Copenhagen will be the famous capital where all of this was done. And nobody questioned the real purpose of this. Nobody took this it on a scientific basis and says, well, what is this? Is there global warming at all? Because if you look at the scientific facts, there's no global warming for the last 10 years. It's actually been a cooling. But nobody took it from a scientific standpoint. It was simply pushed down the throat of anybody. And I have to tell you, it's been a tough time being here in Denmark, especially this year, because it's like everything has been done to have a brainwash on this, including that they have made small songs for the children to sing in kindergarten about climate. You know, they don't know what they're singing. You know, it's like, but they're being trained to sing about this. All the school children has to go through this. You have conference after conference after conference on this whole thing. And throughout the thing, it's like any real science coming into the picture, any scientist speaking out is being hushed up. And anybody which comes with even wilder, unsubstantiated claims will be giving a totally all-time on the media to boast the case.
Right.
So it's been a long work up to this conference, which now will begin in 1 week time.
Right. Let's pick up on one thread that each of you are referring to, because 21st Century Science and Technology magazine online has been, Marge has been editing and putting out different scientists over the years who are exposing that this is a hoax. But some of these networks in the last 35 years, Marge, right, include the so-called self-described centers of climate analysis, and that's where this East Anglia University Climate Research Unit, CRU, comes into play. They and some others have set themselves up over the decades with money as saying that they're going to collect all the data, do modeling. Mm-hmm. But in fact, I'll throw out here, one of the persons involved in internationally opposing this is Lord Monckton in Britain. He speaks out all the time. He said last night on American television he wants to get a RICO suit in the United States, racketeering, because public money was used to not keep data accurately, take all the instrumentation of measures of temperature, lie. So
right. Lie, cheat, and steal.
Okay.
Pretty much. Excuse me. Well, the Climate Research Center at East Anglia was set up in 1971. East Anglia itself was founded by Julian Huxley, who is the eugenicist, head of the Eugenics Society in Britain for years, who then, after the war, immediately decided, you know, millions of people had been killed, but Huxley and others, the British royalty included, and Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, went forward with a program for population reduction. I mean, isn't that – that always amazed me even years ago. Why were they immediately – millions of people died, and they're now going to talk about how we're going to kill more people because there are too many people. At any rate, Huxley and Zuckerman in 1962 founded the East Anglia University. In 67, they founded its environmental school, and in 71, the Climate Research Unit, which is the source of all these 62 megabytes of email leaks, which expose what these guys really think and the kinds of tricks that they're playing. So over these four decades, I think what happened is that, I mean, you have to look at the control of science in the U.S. and also in the world. Margaret Mead was the president of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which is now a real misnomer when you think of what they're doing. She was president in 74. John Holdren was actually president just a couple of years ago before he became the presidential science advisor. But there was a takeover of all these institutions by this kind of Malthusian thinking. And, I remember living through this because, of course, EIR has been publishing all that time. 21st Century is more recent, but since 1988. But before that, there was Fusion Magazine. And I remember hearing the Rita Colwell, who's now, I think she's second in command at the National Science Foundation. She was, at the time, head of the science society called Sigma Xi. She was giving a speech. And she compared human beings to bacteria in a Petri dish. You know, when it gets to be a certain point, they die off when the population increases. But that's how these so-called scientists are thinking. And it's not people think the National Academy of Sciences or any of these groups. All of the major institutions, I would say, are now controlled by people who think like this, who are Malthusians, who think that population is going to outstrip your ability to take care of it. Population grows exponentially, and the ability to provide food grows geometrically, which is totally wrong. I mean, Ehrlich is totally wrong. He's been proven wrong. Every prediction he made has not happened.
I just read recently, this was Holdren, who you just said is the science advisor to Obama, mm-hmm. was appointed by him, said when there were 210 million people in the United mm-hmm. States, that was too many.
That was too many, right. Well, Holdren is a co-author with Ehrlich and has said some really vile things, which you can look up and read. I mean, like Prince Philip, who wants to come back as a virus to limit population. These people actually write down what they think. So when these emails were released, it wasn't a big shock because it's what we've been saying that they were doing all along. You know, that one specific incident. There are just many things you could mention. But you see that this famous hockey stick that shows how temperature has and CO2 wildly increased.
Yeah, the Al Gore had to climb a ladder
because it
was so high in his Inconvenient Truth movie.
Well, they had to really work at that. They had to get rid of the global, the medieval warming period from 900 to, I think, 1300. They had to get rid of that in their data. And so in the emails, they're discussing this, among other things that they discuss. But they're really looking for ways to present through statistics and through their climate models, which in no way are reality and do not agree with observations, looking for ways to continue to fool people. And they have permeated all of these institutions. I mean, there's a huge edifice of United Nations organizations. And Tom, it's not just in Denmark that school children have been subjected to this. I think it's worldwide now. You know, they see pictures of stranded polar bears. Now, polar bears have survived through 800,000 years of glacial periods and non-glacial periods, and children are crying about polar bears. But this is pretty much universal, I think, even in the developing sector, where it's really a shame that people are involved in this. And I think, Tom, you'll probably find a lot of people to talk to in Copenhagen from these countries who will be victimized first by the global warming fraud.
I just know here from Denmark, I mean, the way this has been sold, because you could say in a world where one-third of the world population go hungry every day. How could this climate thing suddenly become something people are so emotionally engaged in? Because, you know, this is supposedly something which will have effects 100 years from now. And the way it has been done in Denmark, but I'm sure this is also universal, is that people are simply being lied to about this and being said, oh, but we have to deal with this because of the poor countries. You know, all of these people living on small islands out there, they're poor, they're hungry, and now they're going to be flooded. Oh, it's so, we feel so sorry for them. Therefore, we have to, you know, the richer countries has to pay a certain tax to help them get through this crisis.
Yeah,
and it's, of course, all lies, lies, lies. Totally manipulation. Al Gore and his friends in City of London that are selling all of these CO2 quotas and making a lot of money on this whole thing. They're laughing their ass off. But that's how it's being sold, also to young people, you know. You want to do something good for the world? Get into climate. You know, do something for the coming generations.
Right. I just want to underscore what you said, Tom. I just saw a couple hours ago what came out of the Caribbean in the Commonwealth meeting that's just finishing there of 53 nations, where I think a Danish leader is present.
Lars Løkke Rasmussen, the Danish Prime Minister.
Yeah. He's there. Okay, then. And Kevin Rudd from Australia and elsewhere. And the Queen made a visit, and I think just what you said is practically the script, that this is taking place in Trinidad, that something binding must happen in the way of reducing global warming emissions in the name of poor countries. In other words, this kind of lie you just described.
But then I just want to throw in, the cat kind of was let out of the bag 1 week ago, where the Danish development minister came out to the Danish newspaper Berlingske Tidende, which is one of the main newspapers here. And she said to them, well, what we are now working on is to try to get population control into the final document in Copenhagen. We know this is very controversial. Even within the European Union, there's countries which are totally opposed to this kind of population control. But this has to be the discussion. This has to be put in the document, because when push comes to shove, it's really the growing human population that's the problem. And she kind of spilled the beans. She laid it out. All of this other charade is really just a charade. What this really comes to is, like Marge said before, this underlying agenda. We have to get the general population to go along with population control, with reducing the population, and then we just have to find an agenda where they will go along with it.
Well, that's true. And they, you know, they started with global cooling, but that didn't work in the 70s. And it was at this 1975 conference that Stephen Schneider switched from being promoting a scare of global cooling with a coming ice age to global warming, because they just couldn't make global cooling work. People, it wouldn't scare people. And the object was for people to cut their consumption and to go along with cuts in consumption in the developed world. For the developing sector, of course, it's just death, because look where they are now. No, and you see, you were talking about the confluence of things. In 1974, the U.S. policy, official policy, in the National Security Study Memorandum 200, was for population control, because they wanted to reserve the raw materials of the developing sector for themselves. And they explicitly say, this is the Kissinger document that was U.S. policy, they explicitly say that if you have more people, you tend to get nationalism in nation states, and they don't like our coming in and looting their materials. I mean, he didn't say it exactly like that, but that was the idea. And you had 72, the ban on DDT. What did that start in terms of allowing malaria very specifically to kill people in the tropical countries in Africa and Asia? And this was very deliberate. Alexander King, who founded the Club of Rome, wrote that. He was one of the more forthright of them. He said, you know, I supported DDT. He was a chemist, I believe. And during the war years, it was very good. Of course, it saved millions of lives of soldiers and refugees and others. He said, but then he saw how it allowed population growth because people were not dying of malaria, and so they could have families, and these families could grow up. And he said, I think it's a mistake. You know, it's a mistake that we did this. This is a fight still going on today.
Now, and just to fast forward to the present day, when we were talking about the network's inactivation for the fraud and for genocide, we had one thing stands out in the countdown, and Tom can describe more about the countdown to what we're seeing 10 days from now in Copenhagen. But in New York City, I think it was May 5th this year, you had a gathering of Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, numbers of other people, Peter Peterson, Oprah Winfrey, but a gang, George Soros.
Yes.
That, Marge, was meeting on the lines that you say that we have, the key thing is to curb population. Mm-hmm. It's got out of control. And the second, but what these people are all, their key implementation besides fraud and lies about science is no nation states. We have to act globally. Even the nominal research for funding against malaria or for agriculture productivity, for example, by Bill Gates, is always the presumption we're not going to have nation states. We're going to fight this. Mm-hmm. And they, for example, a top Bill Gates guy was made chief scientist of the Agriculture Department of the U.S. this year, Rajiv Shah. He's now been made head of Agency for International Development.
Right.
So we're on the one hand, we're seeing tremendous activation of this. On the other hand, we have a big opportunity.
It's true. And, you know, the economic collapse in the U.S., when you think we have 30% of the workforce unemployed, people are not buying global warming as they are wanted to. In other words, the people running the show, the global warming show, are lamenting that it's not a primary issue anymore. The economy, my job, food, you know, these are the primary issues, not global warming. It's at the bottom of the list now. It's really declined in the polls, however you can rely on polls. It's declined as an issue of concern. So that part is good. But
I will also just say, because this has also been shown over the process towards this Copenhagen summit. As I said, the intention was now we're going to get simply rush it through and get everybody to sign mm-hmm. to some kind of legally binding agreement which would put everybody in a straitjacket where no economic development would be allowed except under the supervision of some kind of world government set up through that. That is already falling apart.
Good.
To a large extent during to these economic realities coming into the picture, but also China, India, saying we will not go along with these kind of agreements. We want to keep our sovereignty. Russia also being against it. African nations threatening to walk out of the Copenhagen conference if this kind of thing is going through. Already the bar had to be lowered, so to speak. Now they had to say, well, we don't want legally binding agreements in Copenhagen, but we want a gentleman agreement.
Right.
An intention of what we're going to do and how this is going to be in the future, because they say, after all, we cannot get anything through the U.S. Senate anyway before the Copenhagen summit, and Barack Obama can come and give a big speech like he used to, but it doesn't mean anything because he can't deliver, because the U.S. Senate will not sign on to it. So they had to limit what they can think, but then, of course, they will still try to push something through. I mean, right now they're counting on, I think, 65 heads of state coming towards the end of this Copenhagen process on the 17th and the 18th of December, 193 countries being there, 65 heads and states coming, pushing something through. But this also is, of course, the role we have to play, because I have to tell you, we will be there.
Good.
We will also have people inside the conference to take this fight, to take this discussion. We will have people outside. I have to tell you, when they've had these events during the course of the year, we've had this, when people come, they would be greeted by this huge banner, where British lies lead to genocide.
Great.
Good.
And of course, we kept it, so it's good, because it's still exactly what this is all about. And already, I mean, yes, we have all of these nations coming, but they're not, even though officially this is what is on the agenda, this is also 193 countries around the world who has huge problems, and
sure,
the climate problem being the smaller one of them. They stand in front of not surviving the present economic crisis. So something has to be done. So, I mean, really, what should come out of the Copenhagen summit was to reject this British genocide idea, but then also say, but hey, we have an alternative here. We have the LaRouche plan. We have the four-power agreement. We have the extended version of the LaRouche plan, which is a global development plan. And that, I just have to tell you, we have been having a lot of meeting now, calling around the embassies here in Copenhagen, because they're all involved in preparing this conference for their delegations and so. And there's been a great amount of interest, especially also in, well, what is the alternative? What is there a way that our nation can survive, except and besides all of this crap, which they know it is?
Great. Tom, let me ask you one more thing along those lines, because for many years you've been leading the charge in the electoral arena, in the policy fight, in the national assembly there with testimony and so forth about the development perspective you're just speaking of. And it really gets into the question, there is a grounds for optimism when you're being human and using your mind, as opposed to this disgusting pessimism and evil genocide. And the most recent round of elections you've been leading the charge on this in is the municipal elections, right, just a couple of weeks ago. Can you speak about this?
Well, very shortly, it's of course it was municipal elections, so we could run in Copenhagen, in Aarhus, in the bigger cities, and basically we took this as an opportunity, because democracy is sometimes way overrated. Most of the discussions going on in the name of democracy is bullshit, and everybody knows this. But we had this election, which was an opportunity for us to basically bring the real issues put the real issues on the table. And I mean, Denmark is not as hard hit yet as the United States of the crisis. People in general still have the fantasy, most emphatically in the government, of saying, well, there's an upswing around the corner, things will be a little slower for a year or two, but then everything will pick up, let's give some tax cuts, let's do a little this and that, maybe this thing will go away by itself. So what we did was basically using the opportunity of the election to go out. I mean, there's certain things you can do here when you have elections. Among other things, you can put up posters all over town. So we put up posters all over Copenhagen saying economic collapse. Only a new credit system can save Denmark. And then we had, you know, pictures of long rows of unemployment, the graph going pointing down. And so you got this idea. There's a real super depression hitting us, which is not what the media is talking about. They're talking about, you know, there's a lull, there's a slump, it will come back. And, of course, most people were simply shocked by this and says, why do you say this? Isn't this a bit pessimistic? So it's not like everybody was jumping up and down and saying, you're right, because people don't feel the crisis enough. But the thing is, what we actually did was saying, this is what is going to hit. Knowing that as things get worse in the coming weeks and months, we will have this effect of people saying, you were right once again. Now, what in the hell is this credit system? How do we get out of this? What were you talking about? And we had this it was really a strange thing because as the whole election began, I was invited on national television together with other smaller parties. And I basically, in a very short thing, laid out, this is the issue. This economic collapse is going on right now. We're going to get mass unemployment if we don't do something. There is a solution. We can have a credit system. We can have big infrastructure projects. We can get out of this. And after that, there was a total media blackout for the whole campaign. Mm-hmm. And every journalist would so much want to talk with us because they remember us. They said, you guys warned about the financial crash. It came. Then you said what we should do. Why aren't we doing it now? They would like to speak about this. They would like to discuss our programs for Maghreb. They would like to discuss Mars, how to get to Mars, all of these visions. But simply nobody was allowed to talk about it because we don't want to have a real discussion of the fact that the global financial system is going down the drain and there's no way you can deal with it within the system itself. So you have to, it's like sometimes you have to do certain things which don't have an immediate effect, but which means you told the truth, you laid it out there, so when the shit hits the fan, so to speak, people know you want about it, and then they can say, okay, now what do we do? So that's basically what we did with our election campaign. And it wasn't too popular either, of course, that we totally questioned this whole global warming swindle. And we actually used the famous Danish scientist Hans Christian Ørsted, who was the discoverer of electromagnetism and who was quite very interesting, very exciting scientific figure, but also played a huge part in creating modern Denmark back in the 19th century. And we basically took a lot of quotes from him simply to prove how totally ridiculous and wrong this whole global warming thinking is, because it's unscientific. And we said, well, why don't we go back and let people use the scientific method of Hans Christian Ørsted? This is what built Denmark. People should know this today.
Well, that really raises again the question of what makes a person human, this optimism, this ability to think. I'd like to point out, Marge can respond in any direction here, but Marge, I think your latest issue, the summer issue of 21st Century Science and Technology Magazine on your site, is all on it has updates on fusion energy research, on
right.
going to Mars. Could you describe that?
Sure. And our next issue will have Tom's article on Ørsted,
okay.
as a matter of fact. But the point you made about real science, it's sad, really. And we have a whole generation of scientists in their late 70s and 80s who remember what it was like when we were doing classical science. I mean, many of these people are now not alive. But it's a non-Aristotelian approach. It's a classical approach. It's not based on statistics. And it does use brain power. And in the summer issue, we had an article written by a 90-year-old fusion scientist, Richard Post, who's also an inventor and a very wonderful person, on doing many different kinds of things. But he laid out the fusion program that he thought would be the fastest way to get to fusion, which is the tandem mirror. And this is a magnetic fusion approach. He was involved in building, he didn't do it himself, at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, a tandem mirror device. Then they went to a bigger device, and they spent really millions of dollars building this device, the tandem mirror, in the 80s. And then just as it was ready to go and do its first experiments, it was closed down. It was sold for scrap. It was dismantled. And all of the scientists working on it, you cannot keep alive this kind of knowledge and the experience that they had when you shut down your programs. But this happened throughout the United States. Every program, the breeder program, the isotope separation program, anything advanced that might contribute to allowing Americans and human beings in general to support a population at a better living standard, these programs were shut down, and instead we got green. Vomit. Just green. So I would like to say one more thing about the Climate Research Unit in terms of their control of science, and that is that there are basically 42 scientists who are the lead authors of all the IPCC papers and scientific papers on so-called warming around the world, just 42 of them. They peer review their own papers. So when an editor wants to have somebody to peer review a paper, you know, to make it kosher, legitimate, he calls on this same group. It's a very small group. 16 of them are related to the Climate Research Unit. There are different centers. The Climate Research Unit is only one of the centers that promote global warming and get millions and millions of dollars to do global warming-related studies. I mean, anyone in science today, if you want to get money, you have to. If you're studying frogs, it has to be how climate will affect these frogs or whatever it is. It all has to be climate-related in order to get these dollars. And imagine, Tom, what could be done if these billions that have been spent over the past four decades on ridiculous hoaxes, imagine what we could have done if we were building infrastructure, if we were funding real science, if we were building fusion devices. You know, people worry we're running out of resources. I'm sure you hear that a lot. Well, we create new ones. If you had fusion, you could have a fusion torch. With a fusion torch and its high temperatures, you could reduce rock, garbage, to its constituent elements. You could actually do mining that way. So you're creating new resources. That's what man can do. And this is what this hoax, among other things, global warming, this is what it erased. It wiped it out very deliberately as a way of inducing people for suicide. You know, that's what they're doing.
And I think this is also a little bit, I mean, it was announced that Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course, will come to Copenhagen to be part of this whole thing. And it got me thinking, because Denmark has been, I mean, one of the reasons Denmark was chosen to be the place to have this conference was that originally, in the National Security Study Memorandum 200, where Henry Kissinger and his friends lays out how we have to have population control, they also say that this has to be top secret and this has to be done through other venues. Because if the United States or Britain would say this, then people would, you know, wouldn't comply. Therefore, for instance, the Nordic countries were chosen to be the main sponsors of the UN population program. And so because, you know, who would be afraid of little Denmark, you know? They must have good intentions for the world.
You have 5.5 million people.
Exactly.
You're no threat.
So therefore, Denmark was chosen to this, and you had like Connie Hedegaard, the Danish climate minister, who has now been made the European Union climate minister. She was then chosen to be the one to go around promote this whole thing as the spearhead of this campaign.
She's came to Washington quite a lot, I think.
Yeah. She's been around. She's been, you know, promoted as one of the most powerful women in the world, you know. Don't talk about the British Queen, you know. But they've been promoting her and been running this thing because then you can say this is little Denmark, this is... there's no great scheme behind this. You know, this is all, yeah, you know.
It couldn't possibly be a conspiracy.
Exactly. Now, the point is, though, that Denmark was also playing this role in the whole thing of creating new windmills and all of this. Here we call it, what do you call it in the United States? You have this free energy, I think they call it.
Oh, alternative to free energy, yeah.
You get windmills, you have solar cells, you have all of these things which cost you a fortune just to produce the normal electricity, but you do this because you say it's good for the climate. Now, Denmark has been a world leader in this, but the way it was built up, the way it was made possible, was that the first huge orders for all of these windmills came from guess where? California.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So in a certain sense, you could say, I mean, I think it would be poetic justice that now from California and also from our youth movement in California, the LaRouche youth movement, which has been having its birth, you could say, in California, has
right.
to be the ones which kind of undo this whole insane thing, which in this sense, actually, California had a lot to do with it. I mean, this whole green policy would not have been built up the way it had been either if there had not been, you know, California been buying all of these mint mills, doing all of this crazy stuff.
And economically
and everything, the chicken is coming home to roost in California, I think.
Well, and also in Denmark, you didn't shut down any of your coal-fired plants or standard conventional plants because you built a lot of windmills, because need them as backup.
Exactly. And the windmills, by the way, I mean, this is for exports.
Yes.
It's all the, you know, dumb people around us that buy these things, you know. We as you said, we keep our coal.
Well, you have to. If you want power, you need to have a conventional power plant because the wind doesn't blow all the time and it's inefficient.
One other aspect that you're raising, Tom, with Arnold Schwarzenegger coming, and let me just say the evil side, because I don't think it'll all come to, I'm not intending for any of this to come to pass, but he was the leader in the United States of on the state level setting emissions levels by decree.
Right.
He decreed that several years
yes.
ago. He's part of he is just a hired rotten actor for the networks, Marge, and you were describing earlier, mm-hmm. the World Resources Institute
sure.
in particular.
Yeah.
And that's what's pending in Washington, since even as miserable as the House of Representatives and the Senate membership is, there's a rear guard mm-hmm. action to oppose this.
Yes.
And, but there is a scheme underway to have everything done by unitary executive.
Right.
Do you
like having
say?
The EPA take it over. Well, the astounding thing is on this fraud, one of the astounding things is that if you did what they said and cut emissions, bearing in mind that emissions have nothing to do with temperature, CO2 doesn't. And you can read the articles on the EIR site and on the 21st Century site, especially those by Greg Murphy have documented this. But if we cut back 85% to 85% of the 2005 CO2 levels, which is what the House and Senate bills want, guess what? It would shut down 5/6 of the U.S. economy. That's, you know, minor detail to these people, but it would gain you in temperature. You would save 3/1,000ths of a degree of temperature from this by their own calculations. So what is going on here? I mean, this couldn't be more blatant to somebody who's looking at it honestly.
Right. And let me put a plug in here, because even having President Obama say he's going to go, that happened recently.
Yes.
After certain of the, I think the head of the World Wildlife Fund, Worldwide Fund for Nature, put out a very public call that this is so vital a threat to the planet that the President of the United States should be there. And then within days, Obama said he was going. But this is obviously is humiliating. I mean, there's an intention behind this to humiliate
sure.
and bring down every sense of the American system heritage that means a great deal to the world in the future. So I want to plug again that everyone listening today and in follow-up on the message line in the archive, get involved between now and December 3rd to have the maximum audience and engagement of activists with the LaRouche webcast. The real change is coming. It's 1 p.m. Eastern Time, December 3rd, 2009. That's on Thursday, on LaRouchePAC.com. And otherwise, too, to repeat the phone numbers, naturally, I'd like people to call us at Executive Intelligence Review. You can call in the United States, 800-278-3135, 800-278-3135, or look on LPAC, LaRouchePAC.com, and get in touch on that. Go ahead.
Well, I think when people look at the World Wildlife Fund, they should see Prince Philip, who is really ghoulish looking nowadays, and remember that he wants to come back as a virus so that he can kill people. I guess he's not satisfied that he's been killing enough people in the flesh now. But, I mean, think about who these people are. And if you look at the genesis of this, I just encourage people, when you hear the word global warming, think genocide, because that's what it is. It was set up deliberately for population control. And this can't be said enough. All the exposés of the Climate Research Unit and their fraud don't mention this. I mean, that's what I think people listening here have to really understand and get a grasp of. And we have plenty of material backing this up on the websites. We have plenty of material, certainly, on every aspect of global warming as a fraud. Zbigniew Jaworowski, for instance, has written some very good articles that people can read. He's somebody who went out and went to to 17 glaciers doing ice core studies. He knows what he's talking about. He's not just sitting in an office thinking about this. And you can look at the ocean rise hoax through the eyes of Niels Axel Mårner, who is also who's Swedish, who is an oceanographer who went to all these islands, who's measured the rise, or in some cases the fall, and who lays out very explicitly what a hoax this is, that there is no danger of these islands going under. If they are losing their shoreline, it's because of they're taking too much groundwater out for drinking. They should be desalinating using nuclear plants. But there's plenty of material for people to read, good scientific material.
And one thing they've been doing as part of this lead-up process to this in Copenhagen, that is to get, they've then had an international network of universities, including Copenhagen University, Melbourne, all British universities, American, of course. And then they simply have sat down and said, how can we put out the necessary lies? Mm-hmm. In order to induce, to be so alarmist, portray such a potential catastrophe, that people will be so afraid, they won't think, they'll just act. Mm-hmm. And this is also, I think, so important with this whole East Anglia climate unit that this is being exposed, because they've been doing this.
Yes.
And the whole idea is to give this pseudoscientific label to it. And I think especially for the young people, they have to take the torch here, because they know how much lies is told in university.
Yes.
You don't get educated to find the truth. No, you get educated to have the right opinion. And truth doesn't matter. The way we crack this thing is by young people saying, I don't care about what's the right opinion to have. I want to get to the bottom of this. I want to find the truth. I want to do something with my life, which is not just one big thought. I only live once, so I want to contribute to something that truly benefits humanity, both the present and the future. And I think that's that really has to come into play, because, young people cannot just sit around in cyberspace and do strange things in front of their computer screen, whatever they do. They have to act on reality now. They have to, this is our world. Now it's in a big crisis, and it's a beautiful time to be alive, because we can really make a difference.
Yes, we can use our brains to make a difference, use our human creativity.
And, Tom, you'll be glad to hear, too, some of these networks of people. Marge mentioned 42 scientists. They're
yes.
in on the fraud
yeah.
for decades. Some of them, the Pandora box is open. I mentioned Penn State University. I had occasion to be there recently. And Michael Mann is one of these 42.
Yeah, he's the hockey stick inventor.
And so other faculty members and students then on blogs in the local newspaper, Center Daily Times in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. are now saying, we knew it all along. You're a creep. We're part of the institution. You're a disgrace.
That's good.
It's So, and that's one of our foremost cow colleges of real science in the country. So we are having a good time, and I'm afraid our own airtime has come to an end. This is November 28th, 2009, the LaRouche Show. So I thank you, Tom Gillisberg in Copenhagen, and we're backing you all the way. And I ask people to give their resources, their time, their organizing for the next LaRouche webcast on December 3rd. And thank you very much, Marge Hecht. And we'll tune in with everyone for the LaRouche Show December 5th. This is Marcia Mary Baker.